Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Yeah, that's what it sounded like in the New York City mayoral debate a lot of the time last night. It was debate night in New York and New Jersey. Inexplicably, whoever scheduled the first televised New York City mayoral debate and the first televised New Jersey gubernatorial debate put them on the same night at exactly the same time, 7 o'clock. Really? I know nobody votes in both elections, unless Trump's Voter Fraud Commission unearthed some made-up dead people who did. But both were of general interest to viewers and listeners who care about our region. So debate scheduling people, next time, you can do better. Maybe send each other one email at some point earlier in the year to coordinate. It's not that hard. Now, WNYC had radio rights to both debates. We were co-sponsor of the mayoral debate, and we were allowed to air the gubernatorial one. So we carried the mayoral debate live and aired the gubernatorial debate on delay right afterwards. And we'll start this morning's Brian Lehrer Show with excerpts from both highlights and lowlights. And the night was chock full of lowlights, especially on the eastern shore of the Hudson River. We'll take that one, the mayoral debate, first. Now, like I said, WNYC was one of the sponsors. I was one of the questioners. And if you didn't see or hear it, it was every bit as raucous as you've been hearing it referred to and as that little clip that we played so far kind of indicated. The candidates were shouting over each other some of the time, and the audience was amped up, constantly cheering and booing and chanting, so much so that there were times, even for me sitting on the stage, that I couldn't hear the words in the candidates' answers. Juan Manuel Benitez, one of the questioners from New York One, told me he had the same problem. The moderator, Era Lewis from New York One, did a great job, I think, trying to control the crowd. He asked them nicely, as you heard in that clip. He asked them more pointedly. He threatened to have the worst hecklers removed. He did have one of them removed. But if hundreds of people are determined to keep whipping it up, there's a limit to what you can do. I'm not totally sure why it was so rowdy, but my guess is that the third-party candidate, Bo Deedle, who's kind of a Trump-style provocateur in the way he campaigns, brought supporters who intended on making a ruckus, and then the Bill de Blasio and Nicole Malliotakis supporters both felt compelled and entitled to turn it up themselves. And we'll see what our guests in a couple of minutes think about what really happened there. But for our segment right now, we'll give you some of the flavor of that, but mostly we'll try to sift through the insanity and see what we might have learned about their stands on some of the issues. You remember the issues, don't you? Joining me for this are WNYC City Hall reporter Bridget Bergen, who was watching from here on TV, and Politico New York's Gloria Pazmino, who was also one of the questioners last night, as Politico New York was also one of the sponsors. Hi, Bridget.
Good morning.
And Gloria, I think this is your first time on, so welcome to WNYC.
Thanks so much for having me, Brian.
And listeners, we invite your reactions to the mayoral debate or your questions about it. If you watched or listened or just heard the news reports about it or from the clips that we'll play as we go. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. For our first excerpt, and this is about 2 minutes, we'll go to a round of Gloria's questioning on what they would do about mass transit. We enter as Gloria is asking a follow-up question of the mayor, who has proposed a tax hike on the top 1% to provide an extra MTA funding stream, but that tax hike would have to get approved by the state legislature.
The millionaire's tax plan may not see the light of day until next year. Why aren't you coming up with a plan to address congestion and the subway crisis right now?
Because right now, the millionaire's tax is very, very popular. If Governor Cuomo would support it, and put the energy we've seen him put into some other things, it could be achieved in Albany. We don't have an alternative plan right now. Congestion pricing has been talked about. I haven't seen a plan, and I certainly haven't seen a plan I could support. The millionaire's tax is the way to go because it's right now available and it could solve these problems. But if you're talking about the most immediate expenses that the MTA needs to cover, the state should give back the $456 million they diverted away from the MTA. That was money meant for our strap hangers. It was taken away from them. The state has a surplus. All they need to do is put that money back in the MTA budget. That is enough to cover the plan that Chairman Loda put forward and to address the immediate needs. But let's be real. We need a long-term financing plan for the MTA. We need something sustainable. The best plan, the only one I think is a legitimate plan on the table right now, is the millionaire's tax. We know the millionaires have the money. Why don't we take that money and apply it to the MTA?
Okay. Thank you.
And I should be able to respond to what he's saying, because I did support a lockbox legislation to preserve the transportation funding and make sure it's not diverted. I oppose sweeps and transfers from one dedicated cause to another. And this is a cockamamie plan to say that you're going to increase taxes that may happen in 2020. It's an emergency plan. It needs to be done now. People can't wait 3 years. You really want your constituents to wait 3 years for subways that work?
Republican candidate, Assemblywoman from Staten Island, Nicole Malliotakis, and Mayor de Blasio before that from last night's debate. That question was asked by Gloria Pazmino from Politico New York, who we also heard in there. So, Gloria, can I ask you to do some fact-checking there? What is Malliotakis' voting record on MTA funding? For a lockbox, as she says, or voting to divert funds to the general New York State operating budget, as de Blasio charged, or also to cut MTA funding, as de Blasio also charged?
The Assemblywoman was actually correct in her response here. She did sponsor a bill in 2014 and 2015 called the Transit Funding Lockbox Act. And that was basically a bill that passed both in the Senate and the Assembly that would have stopped the diversion of these funds that Mayor Bill de Blasio was speaking of. So she was correct to state that. What they didn't mention was that the bill passed both times, and both times Governor Andrew Cuomo vetoed the bill. So it's true. This legislation would have prevented the diversion of these funds. It would have ensured that the money went to pay for key transit updates, specifically bus routes, particularly in her district, where some bus routes have been shortened, diverted, changed around, and has really led to some transit problems in her district. So she was right to bring that up. In terms of the mayor's answer on this, and the reason I wanted to ask him about the millionaire's tax, he says it's a popular plan, but there's no question that Albany has already, for the most part, panned this proposal. And while many people in New York City might support this plan, which would only apply to New York City residents, by the way, The big question remains whether it can pass in Albany, and that seems really unlikely at this point.
Yeah, and when you say it would apply only to New York City residents, that's only the top 1% of earners in the city, not in the entire MTA region, who would
that's
be
right.
hit with that income tax hike. Bridget, what did you learn about their comparative approaches to fixing the subway problem, short-term and long-term, in and around the audience screaming?
You know, I'm so glad you played that clip, because it was a moment during the debate that I thought really showed the perspective that the mayor is coming from on a lot of issues, which is he has a plan. This is what he's going to push, even though we know there is opposition to it in Albany, and even though he's tried this type of policy proposal on other issues in the past. You know, I think back earlier this year, the mansion tax was something that he was talking about as a way to fund housing for seniors. He faced opposition in Albany on that as well. You know, it's curious to think why he thinks he's going to be able to get support for it this time around. Certainly would involve changing the balance of power in the legislature. But I thought it was so telling that even when, you know, pushed to say, well, what is the alternative? What's your short-term solution? He didn't offer one.
He
wanted to stick with, this is the plan we have, this is how we're going to proceed. And, you know, it felt very much, you know, that is the Mayor de Blasio we know.
And here's another example that includes de Blasio and Molly Otakis sparring on Molly Otakis's voting record in the Assembly versus de Blasio's effectiveness on an issue. This is in response to a question I asked about fighting inequality with de Blasio's pre-K and paid sick leave and minimum wage hikes. We enter as Molly Otakis is criticizing him on his affordable housing program.
And when you look at the affordability, he talks about affordable housing and he brags about 75,000 or so apartments created. But the reality is that's not true. Those are mostly preserved units with a small amount, maybe being additional units. But less than 11% of those units are for those individuals who earn roughly $25,000 or, I mean, sorry, don't, only around 11% of those are for $25,000 or less income. The mayor is so focused on minimum wage. I want people to get a living wage. I want to give people the training, the experience, the education, so they can get a good paying job. The idea of minimum wage is always meant to be entry level. I worked minimum wage. It was my first two jobs, minimum wage. But the idea that I have is to provide opportunity for individuals to gain a skill, to so they can join a union, they can start their own business. That's how we lift people out of poverty.
And here's some of de Blasio's response a minute or so later.
Sure, look, we're the safest big city in America. That helps everyone. We have healed a lot of the wounds between police and community and got them working together and communicating better. That helps everyone. We have pre-K for all. Pre-K for all. We have after school for all middle school kids. These are initiatives that help everyone and lighten everyone's burden. I talk to parents who tell me that pre-K was important to them, whether they're a low-income parent or a middle-class or upper-middle-class parent, that it saved them on average $10,000-$15,000 a year per child. And now we're going to move forward with 3K going forward, a huge savings to families of all different economic backgrounds. So when you look at the things we're doing, I think they help people across the board. But in terms of addressing income inequality, there are, by our estimate, that by the end of this year, 281,000 New Yorkers who were below the poverty level or near the poverty level just 4 years ago will now be out of poverty. That is the kind of thing that changes lives. The pre-K initiative, the after-school initiative, the paid sick leave, the effort to increase the minimum wage, all of these pieces helped people to live a better life and to be able to make ends meet in this city. By the way, the assembly member, the assembly member voted against a minimum wage increase in Albany and then said and just days ago that she doesn't think the government should be setting the minimum wage. So I think that's a disingenuous argument she just made. We have to set the minimum wage higher. We have to raise benefits. We have to give people a living that they can actually earn and live on this city.
Mayor de Blasio, and before that, Nicole Molly Otakis, the Republican candidate from last night's mayoral debate. If you're just joining us, we're breaking it down with WNYC's Bridget Bergen and Gloria Pazmino from Politico New York, who is another of the questioners at the debate. So, Gloria, as a fact check on that one, did Molly Otakis, as an assemblywoman, vote against the New York minimum wage hike?
So she's been all over the place on this, right? She voted against it. She has said, like the mayor accused her of yesterday, of saying that the government should basically be playing no role in setting the minimum wage. But what I thought was interesting about that answer from Bill de Blasio, he did not really answer the key part of your question, which was, have your policies basically only benefited one very specific sector of New York City's population? And as a result, have you alienated perhaps the other, you know, the other half, and in a way sort of perpetuated this tale of two cities platform that he ran on 4 years ago? He continues to say that his policies benefit everyone, and that everyone is able to reap the benefits of that. But there's a question as whether or not it has, in a way, alienated some of the upper middle class, white, more affluent residents in the city.
Right. And he was trying to make the case, and you heard the booing from certain aspects of the crowd, that he had improved police community relations from some segment of the crowd, maybe Bo Dietl's segment of the crowd. He used to be an NYPD detective. There was booing on that. And Bridget, what did you make of that general exchange.
It was interesting. I mean, I think the mayor did try to make a case that his policies have, you know, reached out to New York City residents more broadly, you know, talked about how even middle class parents have benefited from, you know, his universal pre-kindergarten with the savings that that's given them. It was interesting to me the way that Maliotakis sort of pivoted from affordable housing to minimum wage. And then with her comments on minimum wage and talking about how she had held a minimum wage job, that was her first job, starts to raise some questions about how she values work and what wages people, you know, deserve during different positions. You know, they both talk about wanting to create good paying jobs. That was the centerpiece of the mayor's State of the City address this year. He talked about wanting to create 100,000 good paying jobs. So, you know, I think they both understand that part of the equation to address affordability has to do, you know, has to deal with addressing the wage gap. But they talk about it in much different ways.
And so she is a libertarian kind of Republican in the sense that she does not think government should set a minimum wage, that the market would do a better job. And she said better than the minimum wage to bring people out of poverty is to help people gain a skill. That's what gets people out of poverty, she said, Bridget. So do you know if she's proposed any large-scale training, vocational something, program for adults or anybody else?
I don't know of a large-scale, you know, job training policy that has been part of her platform. Certainly one of the concerns that she has consistently raised when it comes to education is around remedial education and a real critique of the city's school system not preparing students well enough for their next steps. She has talked about vocational training as well, but, you know, not something on the scale or as laid out the way we've heard from, you know, from the mayor earlier this year in right. terms of trying to create a program that would help people develop the skills they need for those good-paying jobs of the future.
And one more thing on this, because I think the inequality conversation and who would be better at continuing to fight it is so central. Gloria, Maliotakis said the mayor's housing plan is too timid with the percentage of units that would be affordable in new developments and the income level those units are targeted for. That's what she said in that clip. Has she proposed at any time an affordable housing program that's bigger in scope or more targeted to lower and less to middle income people?
So this is something that the Assemblywoman has sort of struggled with during her campaign. She is able to issue a criticism of something the mayor has proposed, but doesn't necessarily have her own version of a plan that has, you know, as many details and is as well thought out as some of the things he has proposed. Now, I say that, you know, with the caveat that the mayor's housing plan is less than perfect. And there are a lot of questions about what is affordable. It's been fiercely opposed in several communities across the city. And it does rely on the preservation of units versus the building of new ones. So, yes, she has been able to criticize the mayor pretty consistently on this, but has yet to really deliver a specific plan of how she would address the affordability crisis here in the city.
All right. Another excerpt. And now we get to some of the raucous Bo Dietl moments. Dietl, the third-party candidate running on a ballot line he calls the Dump de Blasio Party. Bo Dietl, for those who don't know, is a retired New York City police detective, runs a security business, and has a long history of appearances on the Imus in the Morning radio show, a main competitor to Howard Stern, where Donald Trump was on a lot. Dietl played a kind of similar role and similarly shoots from the hip in many of his remarks, a few of which come back to him in this question from New York One's Grace Rao.
You, in many ways, have embraced President Trump's approach to campaigning in this race. You seem to say, whatever pops into your head. And at times, it has been offensive to some New Yorkers. On your tax troubles, you said that a, quote, Muslim guy who works for the state was to blame for your problems. You referred to your attorney as my, quote, Jewish lawyer. And you said that you knew that you had lost your court battle when you were trying to run as a Democrat in this race because the African-American judge, you said, looked like Bill de Blasio's wife, Shirlane McRae. So my question, sir, if I could finish my, you'll have a chance to respond, but my question is, how are you going to be a mayor who brings New Yorkers together when you use such divisive language?
First of all, you're wrong on that, what you just said. All I said was the judge was very familiar looking as the mayor's wife with two beautiful eyes and a smile, and they looked very similar. I never used the word African-American, so how dare you use that, and how dare you even imply that?
So that was part of that. And then the mayor, a moment later, responded.
I've got to say something.
Very quickly, please.
I'm really not looking to Bo Dietl for advice on diplomacy, first of all, on how to deal with the state or the federal.
Your wife took that wrong because I never intended.
I'm sorry. Turn off the mic.
If you say a judge is going to make a decision based on her gender or the color of her skin, you're no better than Donald Trump. You're no better than Donald Trump when he said a Mexican-American judge was going to rule against him simply because he was Mexican-American. That is un-American. We do not accept that in New York City.
Okay. All right. Yeah. No, just turn off the mic. Just turn off the mic.
So that was the moment in the debate where moderator Errol Lewis actually had Dietl's mic shut off because Dietl wouldn't yield when his time was up. He had gotten several responses in that round, and he was not going to be come back to again, and that was clear. But he kept talking, and so Errol Lewis had his mic turned off. Now, by the way, as a fact check, Dietl said there his reference to having no chance in a lawsuit because the judge looked like de Blasio's wife, Shirlane McRae. He said in that answer that he thought the judge looked like McRae because of her eyes and her smile. Well, here's a fact check on that from Bo Dietl's appearance right on this program. It was the day after he made the remark, and I asked him about the charge that had sprung up that he was saying he had no chance because the judge was an African-American woman, like Trump had said a Mexican judge would be biased against him. In what way did the judge look like Shirlane McRae, other than she was a black woman?
No, she looked very similar to her. And it's the same thing I say. I mean, why are we splitting nickels here? I explained exactly why I said it. She looked kind of like her sister. And it looked like she could have been part of her family. So that's why she was a Democratic appointment. And I said it more or less in a joking manner that I went, uh-oh, I'm going to have a problem with it. And uh-oh, I did have a problem.
But you're saying it's wrong for people to assume you were talking about race just because judge looks like a specific individual. So I'm asking how, other than being a black
woman, all she looked similar.
Did this individual
Brian,
look
I'll answer it quickly
her
for you.
Nose,
she
her
looked
mouth,
similar.
Her...
Like you, Brian, if I walked into the court and a guy looked like you and we had a beef, I'd say, uh-oh, I got a problem. That guy looks like Brian.
All right. So, Bridget, I've seen reporting that comment about the judge was why he wasn't allowed into the Republican primary by Republican Party leaders. Since he's not a registered Republican, mm-hmm. he needed their permission, and he didn't get it. And I've seen reporting that said it was that comment that led them to say no to him. Maybe they were afraid he would get the nomination, like Trump got the national nomination. Do you know if that's true?
I know that was the reporting after that event. And I just think, you know, just to pause here for a moment, that happened months and months and months ago. And as you just played, he came here on your show the next day, was asked to explain it. It seemed in that moment to recognize that perhaps he hadn't spoken the way he intended to, or perhaps he did offend people. So you would think that months later, he would have come up with some way of being able to respond to that in, you know, a much more diplomatic and sort of, you know, to say, I didn't say what I meant and I apologize and move on. And what that clip, I think, shows us more than anything is that Bo Dietl cannot help but be Bo Dietl. And, you know, if you think that months on the campaign trail, listening to voters, getting feedback, you know, from people on the street and people in the press is going to change how he thinks or how he behaves, think again.
And I did see, sitting on the stage, Bo Dietl go up to the mayor and his wife, who joined the mayor on the stage at the end of the debate. And I didn't hear what they said to each other, but I saw someone else reported that Bo Dietl did apologize to Shirlane McRae if she was offended by that. And I guess they all shook hands. One more excerpt from last night's mayoral debate, and it's back to a question by our guest, Gloria Pazmino from Politico New York. It was about Mayor de Blasio's New York City ID program, which is designed largely to help undocumented immigrants be a little bit documented. And now with Trump in office, there's a dispute over whether the personal records from the people who signed up for a New York City ID should be shared with the federal government.
Please. Mr. Mayor, will you commit to not sharing the information? Can you guarantee you will not share it?
Absolutely. In fact, right now, ID NYC has reached well over a million New Yorkers. It has helped to make this a better and more unified city. Unfortunately, Assemblymember Maliotakis has sued the city of New York to try and get the release of the background information on over a million people to give it to the Trump administration. We are fighting to stop that. We believe, and the NYPD believes, that those records should be sacrosanct under city law. They were supposed to be destroyed. We're going to fight what the Assemblymember is doing. I believe we're going to win, and we're going to then destroy those records so they do not end up in the hands of the Trump administration.
Mr. Mayor, don't lecture me and don't disparage what I'm doing. You understand. I am the immigrant experience. I understand the aspirations of the American dream more than anyone. It's the reason why I'm standing on this stage before you tonight, daughter of Greek and Cuban immigrants, as a candidate for mayor of New York City. Said, number one, that I will lobby personally Washington to make sure that they fix what has been a broken immigration system for 30 years to protect individuals who are here and working hard and want to provide a better life for their families, as my parents did when they came
here. Ms. Maliotakis, the question is, yes. Will you share the documents?
Yes. So, hold on, let me, please, give me a moment to just address that.
We're running out of time. Will you share the documents?
No. My lawsuit is not about turning records over. And did you read the lawsuit? Because it doesn't even mention immigration
Thank
in there
you.
Once.
Thank you, Ms. Maliotakis.
National security to giving
Thank
out
you.
ID, government-issued ID
now.
Cards
Thank you.
Against the 9/11 commission. It's an issue of national security.
Whoa. And the reason Gloria kept jumping in there, that was the very end of the debate. The debate was over. TV time. It was 8:28. They had to wrap it up and go on to the next show. But Gloria, you've been doing a great job as our fact checker here this morning. What is Maliotakis' lawsuit regarding ID NYC? And she said both yes and no in response to your question. So did she sue to get records turned over to the federal government?
So this was an interesting one, because they were both sort of half right, if you will. She did not. I would argue that a yes and a no cancels each other out. So we didn't really get an answer on whether or not she would turn these records over. But she is right to say that her lawsuit is not to provide the documents to the federal government. The lawsuit she filed alongside Republican Assembly member Ron Castorina is to prevent the city from destroying the records. That's a little bit different than from having the city hand them over to the federal authorities. So she was right to correct the mayor on that point. However, she didn't really give an answer on whether or not she would turn the information over, which has been a major issue of this program. The mayor did say that he would commit to ensuring that the records aren't turned over. But the fact is that this is still in the courts. There's been a stay to make sure that the records aren't destroyed. But this is not over yet. And if this moves through the court system and a federal judge rules that New York City could turn them over, the mayor might have his hands tied when it comes to this.
So we've just got a couple of minutes left, and my guests, WNYC City Hall reporter Bridget Bergen and Gloria Pazmino from Politico New York, who was one of the questioners in the mayoral debate last night. Just to get your big picture takes, Bridget, the audience, as we keep hearing, was much more amped up certainly than any New York City mayoral debate I've ever been a questioner in, and I've been in at least one in every election cycle since 97. Why? My guess is that the third-party candidate, Bo Dietl, who's kind of a Trump-style provocateur in the way he campaigns, brought supporters who intended on making that kind of a ruckus, and then the Bill de Blasio and Nicole Malliotakis supporters, because they each had a set number of tickets, so there were plenty of supporters of each one of them in the room, they felt compelled to respond and also then entitled to turn it up themselves. Any other take?
You know, I think back to the primary debate, and I think one of the things that was noticeable that was the number of Sal Albanese supporters that you could hear at even on the televised version of the debate, supporting him in the room, and not the fact that you didn't hear as many de Blasio supporters, which doesn't mean that they weren't there, but, you know, it takes a conscious effort to make sure that you have bodies in that room and, you know, people making that noise. You know, you want those people to be making an impression on your television audience and on the journalists who are in the room who are covering the event. So, you know, clearly there was some thought and some organizing that went into filling those seats with supporters. And I agree that I think that from just watching it from the television here at the station, you know, it sounded like the boos to the mayor sort of also then triggered his supporters to chime in. And I think, you know, what that tells you is there are active campaigns organized around these people. I don't think it necessarily tells you a lot about voter sentiment.
Yeah, and there were competing chance of 4 more years and no more years. Gloria, any other take from your vantage point, sitting a couple of chairs away from me on the stage?
I have to agree with Bridget. Certainly, I mean, this crowd, Brian, certainly kept us on our toes and you know, made it somewhat challenging to sit there and be able to hear the candidates and their responses. I've gotten a lot of feedback from people who are watching from home who said the crowd was really a problem for them because people were shouting over each other and people at home couldn't hear what was being said. So, you know, some people have even said to me that they think live crowds should not be allowed into the space. And I think there is a debate to be had there. But, you know, it's hard to control those crowds. And I think there's no question that each candidate made sure that their supporters were there to shout for them, boo the other candidates and you know, keep the energy very amped up.
And quickly, do you want to do some political analysis of this debate? For all the noise, I'd say probably not much happened. De Blasio didn't discredit himself in any way with people likely to vote for him. Malliotakis did well for herself by being poised and fast on her feet and very articulate and passionate. But her goal here, I think, is not to win a probably unwinnable race as a Republican in New York City in 2017, but to raise her profile as a leading New York State Republican, mission accomplished. And Bo Dietl was having his kind of fun, emboldened by Trump to run this year and, you know, with his in-your-face style. What do you two think, Gloria?
I think that's right, Brian. I mean, no one last night who was supporting Bill de Blasio yesterday suddenly decided they're going to support Nicole Malliotakis now. We know what the polls look like. The mayor is supposed to win re-election easily. What you said about Nicole Malliotakis is true. She is trying to raise her profile, perhaps for a future run for a different office. And Bo was there sort of to, you know, get his 15 minutes of fame and in the limelight. And I think everyone got what they were aiming for. De Blasio was able to stand up there and present himself as a steady leader who can and deserves another 4 more years in order to continue his policies. Nicole presented herself as a strong challenger, and Bo was kind of a, you know, the carnival barker, if you will.
Bridget, last word.
I think I would agree with both of you. Just very simply, I think the mayor's goal was to do no damage, and he did that. It was a solid performance. He didn't hurt himself in any way. Assemblywoman Malliotakis presented herself as a strong challenger. I think probably still has some growing room for whatever her next bid will be. But, you know, is there as an alternative for folks who are disenchanted with this administration, and certainly presented herself as a more serious alternative than the candidate who is on her other side, Mr. Deedle, who, you know, true to form, remained sort of the shoot from the hip kind of almost stand-up comedian at open mic night kind of guy, which plays well for television, but maybe not so well in City Hall.
WNYC City Hall reporter Bridget Bergen, Gloria Pazmino from Politico New York. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.